Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry, with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
Gamble on, fellas. Gamble on.
Welcome again to Gamble On, the weekly gambling podcast presented by USBets.com. I'm Eric Raskin, USBets Managing Editor and Media Director, and I'm joined by my co-host, USBets Senior Analyst Jeff Edelstein. And I'm sure you saw the story, Jeff, about the UConn men's basketball team having to switch hotels in Vegas after arriving for the Sweet 16 because some of their rooms at the Luxor contained, quote, dirt, vomit, and worse. I'm not going to ask you what's worse than vomit. Anyone can immediately think of one or two things the human body produces that could be considered worse. There's no need for us to name them. But I will ask you this. If Better Collective booked you to stay at Luxor for, say, G2E this year, could you put this out of your mind and stay there? Or is the hotel forever off limits after hearing this story? And bear in mind that almost every hotel room in Vegas is a favorite to have had vomit or worse in it at some point.
You think that or worse is somebody may have rummaged to fruition?
Is that possible? Nice succession reference.
Yeah, there'll be probably one succession reference at least per episode for the next 10 weeks, so okay. Be aware of that.
Okay.
But I'll tell you, no, seriously, for someone like myself, and if you don't know me that well, I live off anxiety. It's how I get my oxygen. I haven't found a fear that doesn't live rent-free in my head. It is surprising to report that I love hotels and like these things don't bother me at all. I mean, there's a pile of vomit in room 320. I calmly call the front desk and say, please move me to room 321 and I will immediately put on the slippers provided. You know, totally fine.
Wow.
No problem. Yeah. I love a nice hotel. I love a shitty hotel. I love hotels. I love being in a hotel. I really do.
All right. I mean, I generally agree about the enjoying getting away to a hotel and being able to not think about all the horrible things that have surely happened in that room previously. But the correct answer to my question was simply, I would never have stayed at the Luxor even before this. A hotel shaped like a pyramid? Come on.
That's a good point.
Who can lower themselves to stay at a place like that? The truth is, if the company sends me somewhere, I'll stay wherever they want me to stay.
Sure.
But, you know, it's hard not to develop a little hotel snobbery once you have stayed in one or two of the higher-end Vegas hotels. Back in 2005, my first year working for the poker magazine, I'd spent the previous 7 years working for the boxing magazines that tried to do everything on the cheap, and I'd gotten used to making like $26,000 a year. I was not used to having nice things or being treated well. And the poker magazine put me up at the then brand new Wynn Las Vegas. I mean, like brand new, like it had opened like maybe 2 weeks earlier. And I got up to my room and I called my wife my fiance at the time. I was just like, oh, my God, I don't feel worthy of staying in this room. It's too nice for me. Since then, between covering boxing and gambling, I've been to Vegas a lot and stayed at several of the top of the line hotels. And it is tough to go back and stay somewhere crappy. But I guess no matter how nice the room is, somebody has vomited in there. Somebody has done something worse than vomit in there. There has been lots of rummaging to fruition. All we can ask for as guests is that they clean it up before we check into our rooms.
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable request, you know?
Or, like you said, pile of vomit in 320, put me in 321 at least.
I'm easy.
Yeah. But anyway, never staying in a pyramid-shaped hotel if I can help it is the bottom line for me.
Is it just because of this? Is it a shape thing? Is it memories of pre-Passovers or?
That's it. Yes, it's my ancestors and what they went through.
Sure.
Yeah. I mean, I can taste the bitter herbs as I step into that hotel. All right. Thank you to everyone for joining us for episode number 235 of Gamble On, the podcast you reluctantly listen to after the podcast you plan to listen to turned out to be covered in dirt, vomit, or worse. If you missed any of our previous 234 episodes, they're all available on Megaphone, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all other podcast apps. Please write a review and give us a rating higher than the rating the UConn players gave the Luxor.
Please. Listen, coming up a little bit later in the show, we're going to be joined by our colleague, Mark Saxon, a veteran baseball writer, to talk all things Major League Baseball, and I kind of pin him up against the wall in hopes of him telling me that the Mets are going to win the World Series this year. But before we get to Mark and baseball, it's opening day. Play ball. Let's get to the news.
Here's your Gamble On News of the Week, an inside look at the biggest stories in the world of gambling.
We start this week with some positive news on the sports betting legalization front, as North Carolina's mobile bill passed in the state's House of Representatives on Wednesday by a vote of 64-45 and will next move along to the Senate. And it's worth noting that a mobile wagering bill passed the Senate 2 years ago, and Governor Roy Cooper has voiced support for sports betting, so there's real reason for optimism here. That said, the discussion of the bill on the House floor included some of the more annoying, supposedly morality-based objections we've heard in a while. Representative Abe Jones, a Democrat, by the way, lest anyone think I only pick on Republicans, said legalizing mobile sports betting will bring in, quote, other vices, prostitution, thugs. I don't know. I haven't seen a prostitution boom in my neighborhood since Pennsylvania started letting me build parlays on my phone, but maybe I'm just not looking in the right places. Anyway, in other good news, Vermont, the lone holdout state in New England, took a big step toward legalizing mobile betting last Friday when the House there also passed a bill. It still has to go to the Senate and the governor, like in North Carolina. And I'll note that there are no casinos in Vermont. This is strictly for mobile wagering, like in Tennessee. So, Jeff, thoughts on either Vermont or North Carolina, and any pointed comments for Abe Jones before the hookers and thugs descend upon his state?
Well, speaking as a bona fide thug myself, I'm disheartened to note that the prostitution rate has not soared. You know, it would help my thug life situation.
Yes.
But honestly, Abe, see what I did there? I think he's a little confused. I mean, if we're really going to break this down, I'm guessing that illegal sports betting is a recipe to, like, bring thugs into the game, right? Like, that's, right. You know, that's like, and I'm not entirely sure where he gets the prostitutes from. But, I mean, as far as I can tell, as far as I can see, online sports betting, as you noted, is relatively thugless, and it's almost completely prostitutionless. So I don't know what he's thinking. And you know, as for the legislation, I mean, what do I have to say to this all the time? Just come on, get on with it already, please.
Yeah. The interesting thing with North Carolina during the House discussion was how legislators kept trying to add amendments, and those amendments kept getting voted down. The most ridiculous one came from Representative Marsha Morey, another Democrat. I don't know what's wrong with the North Carolina liberals. She proposed a quote-unquote compromise amendment that would prohibit mobile wagering. So her compromise was to only allow retail betting, which is already legal and up and running in North Carolina. Thankfully, she didn't get very far with that amendment. But anyway, it would seem likely the Senate will try some amendment shenanigans as well. So my guess is this does pass this session, but maybe not smoothly, that there could be a speed bump or two. And as for Vermont, so for my boxing podcast, my co-host lives in Vermont. So this is great. We talk betting from time to time on the boxing pod, and it's all theoretical for him. So I'm excited for him to be able to start blowing all his podcasting money on boxing betting. And actually, he's a huge soccer fan, grew up in England. So I imagine he'll start betting on that as well. Anyway, the word there is that the Senate was actually always a safer bet to support sports betting than the House. So now that it's passed in the House, I would think the people of Vermont should probably be optimistic. They're talking about regulations allowing for 2 to 6 mobile sports books. I really hope it's closer to 6. 2 really isn't sufficient for basic price shopping. It's better than none, of course, but still, 2 books ain't a lot. And if one of them starts limiting you, then you're just about out of options. And, you know, anyone who's been using the offshores is just going to go right back to the offshores. So hopefully they end up with 5 or 6 operators.
Or, you know, because otherwise they're going to the thugs in Vermont, you know, Maple Syrup Sam and the like are going to keep, you know, raking in the dough.
Yes. I assume you have a thug life tattoo somewhere on your body.
2 of them.
Oh, all right. I probably shouldn't ask where they are.
The first one I got like in the small of my back. I forgot that I put it there.
Right. You don't see it often.
Yeah,
right.
So I got it. It's on my forehead. The other one.
Is it in reverse so that it looks forward on the when you look in the mirror?
Half of it is. It's a long story.
Okay. All right. Let's do a sports story next. Let's talk March Madness. When we interviewed Micah Bedard last week heading into the Sweet 16, we noted that underdogs and Cinderellas were doing well, but they took it up a notch the next 2 rounds, leaving us with a Final Four that features a 4 seed, 2 5 seeds, and a 9 seed. And that's good news for the sportsbooks, which mostly don't have a ton of championship liability on these teams. Seems UConn, the best remaining seed, might be a slight loser for some books, but the other teams were hardly bet on, even at long odds, while the books get to keep every penny on Houston, Alabama, Duke, etc. That said, 9 seed Florida Atlantic winning would make a handful of bettors many fistfuls of money, as they were available for odds as high as 500-1 pre-tournament. ESPN's David Purdom wrote about bettor Dave Menashe, who didn't quite get that good a price, but he put $500 on the FAU Owls at 200-1, the largest bet on them at long odds that we've heard about. Jeff, any thoughts on the betting action? Have you been watching any March Madness? And does having 4 long shots in the Final Four make you more likely or less likely to tune in than if a bunch of number 1 seeds had made it?
You know, I'm sorry. I didn't even realize the tourney was still going on.
I guess that's my answer.
And a buddy of mine, actually, he got Miami at 75-1. So he's hoping for Miami to pull the upset against Connecticut and carry on final. Okay. So my rooting interest lies there now.
Okay.
Go Miami. I couldn't name one player on the team. In fact, I couldn't name, if you gave me said name the, you know, a letter in one of the players' names, I could guess S. You know, and I think I'd probably be right.
Yeah,
you know,
probably.
A little RSTLNE, Wheel of Fortune style. you know, the one that's interesting, all this talk, you know, and, you know, I'm going to swing off topic for a quick second here about, you know, and we'll talk about this in a second, about the marketing code AGA and, colleges and partnerships and yada, yada. I really think that when you strip it all away, that college basketball might be the one sport that would suffer the most without betting action. You know, between the bracket tournaments that everyone and their mother plays, and like, I don't know, I just I have a very hard time understanding the draw of college basketball these days. Maybe I'm just like remembering the old days when you had players play for 4 years.
Right.
So, you know, you could build a rooting interest. I don't see the interest. How do you like get behind a team or a player when you know they're only going to be there for a year or two? Or not at all in some cases. Right. So I don't know. I feel like sports betting has been a boon to college basketball. I'd have nothing to back that up with. It just feels that way to me.
Right. I mean, certainly if banning sports betting included banning brackets, then I absolutely agree that without at least the brackets to be able to do, absolutely, the interest in March Madness and in college basketball goes way down.
Yeah.
To double back, though, you got me thinking about the RSTLNE. We're guessing names, I don't think those are the letters you want, because like J is a very popular name letter, but not a letter you would ever bust out early in Wheel of Fortune. So these are different guessing games if you're trying to guess a name.
We're going to need to get our best minds on this.
I think so. Did you see that somebody in the work pool has a UConn-San Diego State final?
I did not see that.
Yeah, that's pretty impressive. This is one of those years where if you have one team in the Final Four, and if you're in a smaller size pool, that's it. Yeah, you're probably winning. And if you have two like this guy, it isn't even close. He was way off on the other two regions. Like, he had both Miami and FAU losing in the opening round, but it doesn't matter. He got two teams in the Final Four. I will say, extremely casual college basketball fan that I am, I'm not really watching anymore. Last weekend, if I saw that a game was close in the last few minutes and I wasn't doing anything important, I'd turn it on. Although the ends of these games, and I know people have been right. complaining about this with basketball for decades, but they just take way too long. Add in all the replay reviews on top of all the fouls and timeouts. It's just not that fun to watch. I'm convinced that the branding, March Madness, makes some people think the tournament is more fun than it really is. I mean, it's perfect branding, right. but the quality of basketball that I've been watching, meh. And yeah. And as I have no remaining sweats of any kind, it's quite possible I won't watch any of the Final Four. I guess maybe if FAU gets to the finals, they're such a Cinderella. I guess I'd keep an eye on the score, and if I'm still awake, watch the end of that game. But otherwise, whatever. My time is better spent rewatching Succession.
I agree 100%. I haven't been a college basketball fan since Jim Valvano was running around looking to hug somebody.
That was the end of it for you, huh?
That was pretty much.
That's interesting. That was the beginning of it for me. That's like the first tournament that I remember really being engaged in, although that game ended after my bedtime. I was, what was that, 83? So I was 7 that spring. I distinctly remember getting up the next morning and my dad describing what had happened at the end of the game to me.
There you go.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products, and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great, too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
All right. On our final podcast of NCPG Problem Gambling Awareness Month, we may as well do one last RGPG story. And the biggest news on that front this week came when the American Gaming Association released an updated version of its Responsible Marketing Code for Sports Wagering on Tuesday. The AGA highlighted the following changes. College partnerships that promote or market sports betting are prohibited. So are sportsbook NIL deals for college athletes. Nobody under 21 can appear in sports betting ads, and the term risk-free is banned. There are others, but those are the main changes. Some states were way ahead of the AGA in putting these prohibitions in place, but the AGA is now formalizing it as national guidance. But maybe the most important thing here is that that's all it is, guidance. The AGA doesn't make rules. It's just telling its members what they ought to do if they want to conform to AGA standards. In other problem gambling related news, the mayor of Washington, D.C., Muriel Bowser, reportedly wants to cut all problem gambling funding. And in Wyoming, one county turned down funds offered to it for problem gambling, saying basically, we haven't seen any gambling problems, so we guess there aren't any. Let's put this money towards something else. And then there was your column this week, Jeff, in which you broke the news that good old Harry Levant is getting phone calls from good old Paul Tonko. So lots to choose from. What do you want to talk about here with regard to this rather unsettling moment we're in on the RG front?
To use the parlance of our times, Eric, I can't even anymore. you know, the more and more I think about it, the more I write about it, like the more irritated I get about it. One of the key takeaways that I wrote about in my latest, you know, old man shakes his fist at the heavens piece on this was sports betting is about 5% of the gambling pie in America. Like what we spend our money on it. Online money, online is 4%. This is thanks to Eilers and Krejcik. Smith and Jones would have been better choice for them, but you know, they study this up. Now you always hear the number 1% of the country has a gambling problem, right? And who knows what that even means necessarily. Like, what does, you know, your gambling problem might look different than my gambling problem, but whatever. Let's say 1% of the nation has a gambling problem. So 1% of the nation has a gambling problem. 5% of the money spent on gambling is sports betting. So what percentage of sports bettors actually have a gambling problem? You know, and I know this is very unscientific what I'm doing here, but I've been gambling. My friends have been gambling. I work in the gambling industry. I know a lot of people. Outside of people that I've met or interviewed for this job, I've never encountered someone that has a gambling problem. I have people that maybe enjoy gambling a lot, but a problem? No one I know has like ended up on Skid Row. Mm-hmm. But, you know, all this is very unscientific, and I recognize that. Right. But, you know, what is very aggravating is that politicians – all over the country, falling all over themselves in an effort to do something. And that's in quotes right there. yes. But, you know, in the meantime, 63% of the gambling dollars spent is on casinos. People aren't losing their shirt at the slot machines. You know, where's the outrage there? You know, 23% of the money is on the lottery. Where's the outrage over scratch-offs? And so it's just so disingenuous to me, this, you know, concentrated attack on the new shiny toy.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah. I mean, that's the key, is that it is the new shiny toy and that it has people's attention. It's a new opportunity for the people who have, you know, had issues with gambling in the past to highlight sports betting as the new thing we need to clamp down on. Yeah. I hadn't really thought about the, you know, going through the people that I've known over the years in gambling and how many of them actually had a problem. But as you were talking there, I thought I know one person who had a serious gambling problem who ended up checking into rehab for it and all that. This was a long time ago. I won't be naming names or anything, but this is, you know, working in the industry. And so other than, like you said, people that you interview for articles who are known to have dealt with a gambling problem, and that's like part of why we're reaching out to them. Other than that, yeah, one person that I know of. I'm sure there are others who had some little issues, but based on our small sample sizes, it doesn't seem the scourge that they want to portray it to be.
It's not, and as we're talking here, I'm thinking in my head. You know, how about, you know, the commercials that promise riches? How about every commercial for every stockbroker? You don't see people living in a one-room apartment on Charles Schwab. You know, it's all people living in these like whitewashed houses, and everybody's beautiful.
Right.
And I wrote about this. Upwards of 8% of people who like invest in the stock market qualify as problem gamblers. Where's the outrage over these advertisements of, you know, E-Trade and TD Ameritrade or whoever, you know, selling this dream that you're going to become rich by investing in the stock market? It doesn't exist. It's so disingenuous.
Yes.
It's aggravating. It's very aggravating to me.
Yeah. And the phone call detail that you slipped into your column, it's a small detail, but it's an important one. It tells us Levant has the ear of the politicians, and, you know, a Keith White gets totally tuned out by a guy like Tonko. Now, nobody seems to think Tonko's bill banning all sports betting ads has any chance of passing, but just the conversation, it's so headed in the wrong direction. I mean, you know, it shouldn't be that hard to understand. With gambling comes some problem gambling, you know, and whether gambling is legal or not, there's that. But of course, yeah, legalizing it leads to more people doing it. So anyway, with gambling comes some problem gambling. With problem gambling resources and education comes less problem gambling and more responsible gambling. And yet there are some people who refuse to see that and who think the sky is falling. And, you know, this attitude of legal gambling means everyone's going to lose their house and, uh-oh, here come the prostitutes. You know, it's such a shame that so much time is wasted even considering that side of the discussion. The AGA code, it's all good in theory. College partnerships with sportsbooks probably shouldn't be a thing. Risk-free never should have been a thing. And it's good to have the AGA laying that out, but there's no enforcement. It's just a code. It's a list of suggestions in the end. But, you know, there's certainly no downside to them updating the code. I don't know. It feels like an out with a whimper way to end Problem Gambling Awareness Month, kind of. But hey, we did our part, Jeff.
We did.
Gamble On, other than its problematic name, encouraging everyone to keep gambling, this podcast has been pretty responsible, I think.
I think so. Well, except one quick note, though, before we finish up here. Generally speaking, is not the usually what somebody would preface "Here come the prostitutes" with.
You're right. Well, hooray! Is that
more likely? Yeah.
Open the door. Here come the prostitutes. Yeah.
It's time to welcome a special guest from the world of gambling. Let's get to the Gamble On interview.
This is one of the most glorious times of the year. The day this podcast posts is the day the baseball season begins for all 30 teams, as MLB has smartened up and is giving us 15 opening day games spread out across the whole afternoon and evening. And we're lucky enough to have on our staff a veteran baseball writer. He's covered the sport for more than 20 years for ESPN, The Athletic, and beyond. He is Mark Saxon. Mark, welcome back to Gamble On.
Thank you. It is good to see you, gentlemen. On a, are we allowed to say what day it is?
Break the illusion that we record the interview separately from the rest.
It's 1997.
That's perfect. That's when I started covering baseball, so I feel like that's right in my wheelhouse.
Oh, there you go. All right. If it were 1997, we'd all have more and darker hair, but so be it.
Ouch.
So before we get into any specific teams or players or wagers for this season ahead, I'm curious, Mark, for your take on the rule changes and how they could impact games and lines and betting. We have the pitch clock. We have the banning of the shift. We have the bigger bases. We can't bet on how long the games will last, but we can bet on total runs and the like. So do you see any of these rule changes having a significant impact betting wise?
Yeah, they're definitely going to have an impact. I think it's going to have to shake out a little bit. Like, you know, they banned the shift. So what do we see in spring training? Some of the more analytics-based sort of front offices were putting an outfielder over on that side of the field. So, you know, maybe some of these guys who are extreme pull hitters are still going to have to deal with some defensive, you know, shenanigans, if you will, because – if the guy has no chance of hitting it on the ground to left field, why not take that guy and put him in shallow right field, right? And so we're, you know, these teams are going to try to stay one step ahead. So there's that. But, you know, and I think it is worth looking for from a gambling perspective at players who were hurt most by the shift, because they're not going to be able to put that extra infielder on that side. And if you look at the way some guys hit now, they literally cannot hit the ball on the ground unless it's to that side of the field. So it makes sense to do that. And it, we'll just have to see the counterpunch with teams defensively. There will be a few more stolen bases, but teams have kind of stopped playing that style of baseball. I mean, you're seeing the leader every year is maybe getting 50. When I was a kid, you know, here in St. Louis with Vince Coleman, somebody always got 100, right? So you see the difference there. But yeah, it's going to have an impact. I do think we have to let it shake out. And see how that happens. But I definitely think it's going to be a lot of fun to see it happen. The pitch clock, man, for in-game betting, to get your wagers in fast, because 15 seconds, for, you know, 14 with the guy on. So, yeah, it's going to have an impact. Just kind of, I would say wait a little longer. You might get an edge because they're baking all that into these lines at this point.
That's interesting, bringing up the in-game betting with the pitch clock, because baseball was the sport that the in-game betting focused operators always talked about as this is the sport that's made for in-game betting. That's a little tiny bit less made for in-game betting now, would you say?
Yeah, although like the, you know, like if you're, let's say, simple bet and you're the one who provides most of the, you know, the machine learning that can immediately update the odds and give you, you know, good reliable odds. They would claim that if you don't have their technology, you can't do it at all, right? Because you have to have that AI basically to reset the odds so quickly that you do have enough time to get your wagers in. So that'll be interesting to see, but it's going to be a challenge for them regardless to make it even that much quicker, right? If you're shaving as much as with some of these guys were taking, you know, 25 seconds, you're shaving 10 seconds off. That's significant.
Yeah.
All right, you know, I don't like betting minus 110 ever. I like a nice long shot. I like a nice sweat. Any player props or award market props out there that catch your eye that I might be interested in anything?
Yeah, it's funny. Can I Can I plug one of our stories upcoming?
Yeah, of course.
Yes. Yeah. So, well, no, maybe not upcoming. It's going to launch kind of when this podcast is available. One of our staff members, Mike Seeley, took the bold stance that the Los Angeles Dodgers will not make the playoffs. I like that as a, that's, you know, I don't think it's going to happen, but the thing about this National League, and you guys are, you know, fans, I think Jeff, you're a Mets fan, Eric, you're a Phillies fan. There's some beasts in the National League this year. I mean, there's some teams really going for it between the Padres and the Dodgers out west, the three beasts of the East that, you know, we mentioned, throwing the Braves in there with your teams. And I think the Cardinals, really, I think this could be the best offensive Cardinals team we've seen since maybe 2004 when they had Jim Edmonds and Lance Berkman and Albert Pujols and his absolute, you know, prime, just busting out as the best player, best right-handed hitter in the game. So you're going to see a lot of run scoring in St. Louis. I think there's some really good teams in the National League. If I were to pick a long shot team to win the World Series, I would not pick it in the National League. It's too many super teams to get by. I would pick it out of the American League. And I like a couple of long shots that I like are the Angels. I just have this feeling they could, it could finally click. When you get the two best players in the game on one team at 45-1, that's hard to pass up. They made some incremental baseball moves this offseason instead of the big splash that their owner likes to make that rarely makes sense on a baseball, on the baseball side. So I like the Angels at 45-1. And I do like the White Sox as well at 30-1, just because of the level of talent. I just think it's rare to see a team have two entire lineups struggle one year after the next. There's just too many of those guys. They're too good to not bounce back to some extent. Too many guys had bad years on that team.
Yeah, I love how people always say that the Angels have two of the best players in baseball. I think a more accurate description would be they have three of the best players in baseball. It just happens to be only split upon two human beings.
Yes. Right. Well played. I would say not only do they have two of the best, they have the two best.
The two best, yeah.
I think. You know, I don't even think you could think it's close. Right. The talent is just ridiculous. And for them not to make the playoffs is bad for the game. And we could go in that forever. Mike Trout needs to be in the playoffs.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was going to ask you actually about some of the long shot teams that you like, but you got around to that anyway. So actually doubling back to, that's all right. Jeff was kind of asking about individual players and props and stuff like that. And so talking of Trout and Ohtani, they're the short money for MVP.
Yeah.
Is there anyone a little longer for MVP or Cy Young or anything like that that really has your eye?
Yeah. Keep an eye on, here's a guy, here's a name. And this is, I don't even know if he's on the board. If you can find him on the board, I like Dustin May as a potential Cy Young candidate or strikeout leader in the National League. This is a guy with all kinds of stuff who came back last year from Tommy John surgery. He was bad. His command was terrible. And he has admitted that. But you very, very commonly see a pitcher when they first return from major arm surgery having, you know, serious command issues. I could see him putting it all together. Similar to Tony Gonsolin, who was on the same staff. You know, the Dodgers guys go away for a while. They go to the little pitching lab and they come out much better, right? So the Dodgers have a way of doing that with all their spending on analytics and performance and everything else. They have a way of kind of finding these guys' strengths and honing it. I know he's abandoned his sinker for a four seamer, which is more in keeping with the current style of pitching. Dustin May is an interesting name to keep an eye on. If he's healthy and he looks good early in the season, I would jump on that.
All right, I just looked at only one sports book that I glanced at here, but they've got him at 60-1 for Cy Young. That seems like a decent flyer to you.
That seems like a decent flyer. Yeah. Now, obviously, one little thing goes wrong, he starts having some pain, or he's not, you know. But I would say, yeah, that seems like a really good flyer on that talent. I will jump on that all day. Obviously, you know, Sandy Alcantara is just absolutely come into his prime. So if you're looking for the chalk, I would go with Alcantara. I just think, you know, there's too many other guys who are the chalk in that conversation who are 35 and up, you know. And while those guys have proven they can do it at that age, just it's just much more likely that something goes wrong for those guys at that age. I just think I would take the guy in his prime with the high octane stuff.
And I'm seeing actually Ohtani for AL MVP is only like plus 220 or so. It's unbelievably short. I mean, Trout used to have those prices when he was in his prime. He would open the season around plus 200. Is in Ohtani, in your view, is he indeed like 30% likely to win MVP, and those odds make sense? Would you even think about betting him at that short a price?
No, I wouldn't. I'm like Jeff a little bit, especially with MVP. There's just somebody who comes out of nowhere every year and just reshuffles the deck. As great as Ohtani is, can you just count on, you know, the same level of greatness every year? Maybe. I mean, he's different, right? He's just a different kind of guy. We haven't seen somebody do this type of stuff before. He just physically kind of dominates the game. But I just think the game now, I'm telling you guys, when I started covering it in late 90s, as I referenced, they were not as big and strong and fast. There's just so many athletes out there now in the game. You walk into a clubhouse now, it looks like an NBA clubhouse. The pitchers are all 6'5". They can dunk. They're these, you know, there used to be 5'11 pot-bellied guys throwing 92-mile-an-hour sinkers out there and then chain-smoking after the game. Where are those guys anymore?
Where's Rick Rushel, man? I miss Rick Rushel.
Yeah, Rod Beck.
You know?
Yes. Ray King. I mean, where are these guys?
They were great. It used to be like you collect baseball cards and you would see these guys and they're just like, you can't believe that. You know, they're like golfers practically. You know, right, and now golfers too are, you know, super athletes.
Yeah. What is the new sport for pot bellied guys? Is it bowling still allows pot bellied guys, right?
Pickleball.
Okay. There you go.
Let's start a league. I want to be the pot belly guy, not the one who has to work out like
that. Seriously.
Right.
You know, Mark, you mentioned some of these over 35 pitchers. The Mets have a couple. I think they're pushing 80 in Verlander.
Collectively, yeah.
Barely. No, I mean, every year since I've been let down by the Mets, it's a tradition. What do you think? We mentioned how loaded the National League is. Where do you see the Mets in this National League shakeout? You know, give me some hope.
They're great. They're right there. I mean, the guy gets all this heat for building this great team, but I mean, why, if you're a Mets fan, what do you care? It's not your money, right?
Yeah.
Padres are trying to do the same thing. You know, neither one is like pushed it all the way through, right? It's not like they're the Dodgers or the Braves who are kind of constantly knocking. They're making their push. That's a great team. I love the balance of contact hitting and power, as sort of exemplified by Jeff McNeil and Pete Alonso. And then obviously they're just going to keep bringing arms at you. Edwin Diaz is going to hurt because they're the kind of team, again, a closer, if you're a mediocre team, who cares if your closer is hurt? But if you're in a division that tough, you don't want to fall behind even two or three games after April. And if they're having trouble closing out games, that could be an issue. But yeah, there, as long as those two horses stay at the front of their rotation, it's almost impossible for me to imagine them not being in it. It really is. But tough division, right? Every game, every series is going to be really, really exhausting. And that's going to be a lot of fun. That NL East is going to be a lot of fun. The Centrals are just terrible. So you could have, nobody spending any money in the middle of the country. I don't know what that is. My wife and I seem to be spending a lot of money, but nobody else is. So anyway, and then out west, you have those two behemoths. So it's really, the National League is absurd this year. It's just really sick.
Yeah,
I think Jeff and I both, as Mets and Phillies fans, it's not pleasant having the Braves in our division, because on paper, I think they're the best team in the National League, maybe even in all of baseball. I guess it's hard to put anyone ahead of the Astros until someone proves it. But, I mean, the Braves are really loaded this year, it feels like.
I still wake up in the middle of the night sometimes just reflexively booing Chipper Jones. hasn't stopped.
Larry, you mean?
Larry. Nice.
All right, let's switch to a different, quick, separate topic here to finish on, Mark. But it stays with the Mets theme of talking New York, sort of. You cover New York State gambling for us, and you've been in frequent touch with Joe Addabbo's office about his New York iCasino bill. He said repeatedly that it's a matter of when, not if. Mm-hmm. The when won't be 2023. Do you have a sense of how optimistic he is that it will be 2024, or is there a good chance New Yorkers are still waiting several more years for online casino and online poker?
You know, I think if you listen to Joe, you'd say, oh yeah, it's a slam dunk next year or close to it. Because like in his analysis, it's just absolutely a win for the state. And he really bemoans this, this cited number of $1 billion a year that's going to Jersey, Delaware, Pennsylvania, and the black market. And he laments those tax dollars that they're missing. He thinks they'd be crazy to let it go another year. But what are we seeing, in the Northeast and nationally now? We're seeing a little bit of pushback on gambling in general, right? They're cracking down on on advertising. And so the question, I think, is can he line up enough other political leaders? He's also lamented, I can't be the only one doing this, right?
Right.
There's got to be some appetite for it. And I think that's what's unclear right now. And what could set the tone for that is kind of the mainstream media coverage of the gambling industry going forward. We've seen these really negative pieces that have caused all these political leaders to go, wait a minute, I better not be on the wrong side of this thing. Should we be pulling back or expanding? And Joe's, in that case, looking to expand with iCasino. So I would say if I were to handicap it, I think it could be a tough go again next year. I just think we could see some of these same forces still at on the loose. Now, if that calms down and people see, yes, it's working and we've got the problem gambling under control and all the rest of that, then I think you'll start seeing some forward motion. But, the governor really sets the tone on that. And when she didn't project casino revenues until 2026, and when she had no mention of iCasino in her executive budget, I think that kind of killed the enthusiasm for it.
All right, a little bit of too much of a downer note to end on. We have to end on a high note. Promise Jeff, guarantee Jeff, the Mets are winning the World Series this year as we wrap up.
Jeff, I will guarantee you. I will guarantee you, and mark this down. I will streak through wherever town square you live in. If the Mets do not contend this season for a World Series.
For the sake of the eyes of Central New Jersey, let's hope the Mets contend, Mark.
Okay. Very, 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 very smart.
Well, I think it's going to be a fun season for all of us, and all of our teams will be at least in the hunt. And I'm just excited for baseball to start. So thanks so much for coming on the podcast again, Mark. I'll mention to everyone, you can follow Mark on Twitter at Mark A. Saxon. Play ball, Mark. Thanks for coming on Gamble On again.
Best time of year. Thanks for having me, gentlemen.
Two men. $10,000. Will they run it up or blow it all? It's time to check in on the Gamble On bankroll.
Let's update our betting bankroll, and this was something of a roller coaster. We started the week off very well with the Florida Atlantic bets in the Sweet 16. I had them getting 5.5 points. We won $100 there, and we had a small $40 money line bet that turned in $82 profit. Then my boxing bets didn't go so great. I went 1-for-4. I got very lucky on the bet that we won. Chris Colbert did not deserve the decision over Valenzuela, but the judges gave it to him, so we won $50. Very lucky. A little unlucky on a couple of the others. We had +575 underdog Abel Ramos to beat Cody Crowley. He came close, lost a majority decision. We lost $28. I had the right winner but wrong method of victory in Jesus Ramos versus Joey Spencer. Ramos won by stoppage in the seventh. It was a total blowout, and we needed it to go the distance. Lost $50 on that. And then the main event, we had Benavidez by KO in rounds 9 through 12. He really seemed to have Caleb Plant on the brink of a knockout in each of those last four rounds, but couldn't finish the job. Won a unanimous decision. We lost $50. And lastly, the four-team XFL parlay, because when the previous week's three-teamer doesn't work, try a four-teamer, right? It started off well. You won with Seattle and St. Louis, Jeff, but then Arlington lost and ended our parlay, and the once mighty Roughnecks lost two for good measure. So we dropped $100 on that, which means for the week, are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
We turned a profit of $4.
Hey, it's a start.
Want to give me the Rocky speech, Jeff, about this being the greatest day of your life other than your kid being born?
Not today.
Okay. Anyway, those extra $4 mean we're now down by $2,224. We also have $1,040 on hold in futures bets, so that leaves us with $6,736 available to bet with this week. and I'm up first, and I'm just going to copy paste my MLB futures bet from the Staff Picks article that Mr. Saxon compiled that ran on US Bets. That bet was Corey Seager to lead the league in hits at plus 6,000, 60-1. He faced the shift on 93.4% of pitches last year and was estimated to have lost 26 hits to the shift. The next highest number in the league was 14. I do expect teams will do the thing Mark talked about with the left fielder just behind the dirt in shallow right, but still, Seager should get some hits back, and more to the point, he'll try less to hit for power. All that shifting turned him into a walk-strikeout-homer guy. He hit 245 with 33 homers last year after previously being a 300 career hitter. He hit 400 in the preseason that just ended. That's good. I think if he stays healthy, he has a shot at leading the league in base hits. Yeah, maybe like a 1 in 30 chance or something, but he's priced more like the 245 hitter he was last year than like a serious contender. He's 60-1, so let's fire at it. $20 to win a fat $1,200.
I like it. I like it. Okay, this is the worst bet ever made on this podcast.
Wow. All right. I can't wait.
The odds are so pitiful. All right. Today, opening day, DraftKings is offering odds on a no-hitter being thrown. What do you think the odds are?
Well, I saw your tweet about it, so you'll just have to reveal to the listeners.
The odds are 2,500, plus 2,500, which indicates a like near 4% chance of a no-hitter being thrown, which indicates that a no-hitter should be thrown once every 25 games.
Right. Well, we have 15 opportunities. I don't know quite how the math works out. I don't think that's right. But still.
No, you're right. So 25. So, but once every like 375 games.
Right. Sure.
Multiply it out.
Right.
Not that's not how it works. I mean, in the history of Major League Baseball, it's roughly 13 every 10,000 games. You know, 1.3 every 1,000 games. Okay. These odds should be at worst should be like plus 7,000 at worst.
Yeah.
But they're plus 2,500. But I like no-hitter. My favorite part of baseball. I really, nothing gets me more excited than like a no-hitter. So I'm going to put $10 on it just for fun.
Okay. So that's, $10 to win.
Yeah.
Gives us $250. Okay.
Yeah. It's a horrible bet. It's the worst bet ever. But it just gives me, think how much fun this will be if later on this afternoon we're going to the ninth inning and, you know, somebody's got a no-hitter going. It's fun. We got all the aces going today. It's cold outside. I don't know.
That's true. It's and I assume that a collective no-hitter by multiple pitchers would still count.
Yeah,
so, it could have been worse because when you started talking about it and I had seen the odds, I was a little worried your terrible bet was going to be betting against the no-hitter. what is that, minus 20,000? Yeah. So I don't want you risking $2,000 of our bankroll to win $10. So I guess this is better. I can live with losing $10 if this doesn't pan out.
Yeah, $10. I mean, this is fun money right now.
Right.
This is using our fake bankroll in a fun way.
All right. Now let's say that it's the Mets entering the ninth inning, getting no hit. You're fully rooting for them to get no hit on opening day at that point.
I don't give a shit.
Okay.
This is fake money. So so I'd be rooting for the Mets to get no hit even anytime, really, just because
you love a no hitter that much.
I love a no hitter that much.
All right. My second bet here is another futures bet. Marlins under 76.5 wins. I heard a podcaster from Unabated who seemed to know his stuff state this with massive conviction, saying people are way overrating the Marlins. He thinks they're like a 70-win team. Their lineup sucks. I really can't recall most of his logic, but it was making a lot of sense. And he was really, really passionate about it. And hey, I'm a Phillies fan. You're a Mets fan. We can find common ground rooting against the Marlins. And since it's a season-long bet, it's silly to sweat 162 games for the usual $110 or whatever. So I'm thinking, let's go 2.5 units, just enough to make me care and check the box scores. $275 to win 250. Marlins under 76.5 wins.
All right. I like it. I am going to go with a 5-team money line baseball parlay because those always hit.
Always.
Every time. but it's fun. And so we are going to go, we're going to put $96 down to win 1,000.
Okay. Got
plus 940 here all today. The Braves, the Reds, the Orioles, the Angels, the Rays. Got it.
Uh-huh. I think I got it.
Braves, Reds, Orioles, Angels, Rays to win 96 to win $1,000 plus 940 at DK. What could go wrong?
Was there a game among those that's like jumping out at you as a or was just you're throwing five darts at the board and those are the five teams you hit?
No, I mean, I looked at them all. I mean, you know, opening day, aces on the mound, you know, right. Bad teams. I don't know. The one minor upset is the Orioles over the Red Sox, I guess, but I don't know.
Okay. All right.
I like them all. So I actually put $5 of my own money on it. So that I have real money on this one.
Okay. Maybe I'll do the same.
Just for fun.
Why not? So my last bet that I just gave out was stolen from some baseball podcaster whose name I don't even remember. But this last one from me this week is mine, all mine, a boxing bet that I love. Saturday on ESPN, a crossroads fight, prospect Robeson Ramirez versus ex-title holder Isaac Dogbay. Ramirez was a heavily hyped prospect who lost his pro debut a few years ago, which that does not happen with heavily hyped prospects who are matched very carefully in their first fight. But he's bounced back. He's won 11 in a row since. He's obviously good. I'm not convinced he's more than good. And Dogbay, he's solid. He only has two losses, both against Emmanuel Navarrete, who's a top guy at featherweight. When I heard about this fight, I thought, great matchup. Great crossroads fight. Really interesting. Very even. But it turns out FanDuel has Dogbay at plus 520. I would think he has good value at plus 200. He's more than just a live underdog. I think he's 50-50-ish. This fight could go either way. Let's hope it goes Dogbay's way and bet $50 to win 260.
All right. Yeah, my next bet actually is a little bit of a 50-50 coin flip in my mind as well. Not as good odds, though, however. Okay. So I am going to go. This is an NFL draft bet. Cornerback Devon Witherspoon he plays college for somebody, Illinois. But as I'm going to say, at plus 175 for $100 is the first cornerback off the board. His competition is Christian Gonzalez of Oregon. And all the mocks that I see, it's like the flippy floppy, you know, there seems to be no rhyme or reason. So I think, and it's tightened up also, you know, originally Witherspoon was probably like 250 a month ago. So people are seeing that. And so at once plus 175 of what I think is a coin flip, why not?
All right. And Witherspoon is undeniably one of the most fun names to say in all of sports, whether you're talking about terrible Tim Witherspoon or you know, pivot slightly to a Clarence Witherspoon from basketball in the 90s. It's just a fun name. It rolls off the tongue. So is it Devon Witherspoon in this case, you said?
Devon Witherspoon.
All right. He's our guy. And that'll do it for this episode of Gamble On. Thanks to everybody out there for listening. And thanks again to this week's guest, Mark Saxon. You can find me on Twitter at Eric Raskin and Jeff at Jeff Edelstein and follow US Bets at US_bets. Go to usbets.com for all the latest news and analysis from the world of gambling and subscribe to this podcast on Megaphone, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else. And with that, Jeff, please take us out.
You know, normally I use a space to get angry about something, but it's opening day. You know, despite the fact that I'm not the baseball fan I was when I was a kid, and it's still like the high holy day of the calendar here. And it always kind of brings me back to the like time when I was a kid. I was that kid. I knew like every stat. You know, I Strat-O-Matic baseball. I played like it was my job. I mean, hours a day for years. I would play this with friends, solitaire. Like, you know, I would read Baseball Digest. I'd go to the library. I'd get old issues of Baseball Digest. Xander Hollander's Complete Handbook of Baseball. Shout out if you remember that. I mean, all I did was live and breathe baseball. And really, I have no one but to thank but my dad. So it was summer of 79. I was 7.5 years old. And my dad says, I'm taking your first baseball game. And we go out to Shea Stadium. They were playing the Braves. I remember it like it was yesterday. Joel Youngblood became my favorite player. Mm. I'll never forget this tall, lanky guy sitting in the box seats. You know, there was like 3,000 people at Shea for this afternoon game in August of 79. The guy must have, you know, in my mind's eye, he was like Manute Ball. He was so tall and thin. And he was drinking Budweiser Tall Boys and screaming at Frank Tavares, the Mets shortstop, "You're a bum, Frankie! You're a bum!" And it's so quiet. Frank Tavares could hear the guy, like clearly right. Could hear the guy. And that was it. I fell in love with all of it that day. And so thanks, Dad, for taking me, A, to a baseball game and, B, to a Mets game. Thank God I'm not a Yankee fan. I don't know how people live with themselves being a Yankee fan. But it started me on this path of really direct line to where I am today, right now, talking to you. You know, my dad doesn't take me to that baseball game, I think my life goes down a wildly different path. So thanks, Dad. Thanks, Joe Youngblood. You're a bum, Frankie Tavares. Gamble on.